I'm delighted to have Mark Chivers from Zero Carbon Dorset in the studio to speak to us. Hello, Mark. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, who are Zero Carbon Dorset and what do they do?
So, Zero Carbon Dorset is a project of which I'm probably the main person at the moment. And we have a launch event in the university on Friday the 20th, but alongside me there's a number of people, lecturers from the university and a couple of individuals who are helping me to organise it. The background to the project is some years ago we started to look at the climate crisis and what we need to do to solve it locally. And the Centre for Alternative Technology in Wales have produced a number of reports called Zero Carbon Britain. And what they've demonstrated through extensive research and analysis is that actually we could become a zero carbon country, a net zero carbon country, using existing technology with no nuclear power. And they've done this, as I say, through quite extensive research, including looking at sort of 10,000 hours worth of weather patterns to see whether the wind blows enough for turbines and the sun shines enough for solar panels, and proved that we could be. Now, there's a number of conditions with that, like reducing energy demand and producing our food much more efficiently for the environment. And so at the time, I discussed with a number of people how good it would be if we could understand what that would look like in Dorset. So if it would apply, if it works across the whole country, what would it mean for us? And so the idea really is to find out where we are now, because with lots of these problems, people just don't understand what the situation is locally. So are we, how much of the problem are we causing? How much do we need to change to solve it? And so that's the thinking behind it. And then the aim is that we'll effectively try to analyse that locally, do the research locally, assess where we are, and then look at the steps we need to take to get to a net zero position in the county of Dorset.
Okay. So are there zero carbon areas all around the country, or is this something that you did off your own initiative?
Both, really. So there are quite a few people have adopted and adapted the report to for their own areas. So you'll find quite a lot of zero carbon projects. I think we're subtly different here, in as much as there's one of the areas behind part of the thinking behind the project was there's an awful lot of people out there already doing good stuff. Lots of people, whether it's transition town movements or sustainability projects and things, even what the councils are doing. Lots of people are doing good stuff, but it's actually quite difficult to pin down how much each of those initiatives are contributing to solving the problem. So the subtle difference, I think, with what we're trying to do in Dorset is this quantifying it, trying to get to a point of really understanding what the situation is. And one of the reasons why we're trying to work, well, we are working with the university on this, is because we suspect that the answer to lots of the questions will be, we don't know. And therefore, it's really great for particularly not just people who are studying, environmental science, but people who are studying other areas and want to do something, whether it's for a thesis or for postgraduate study, around how can I design something that has a positive impact for the environment? And we think we're going to come up with a lot of questions to which there aren't answers. So if there are students out there thinking, what could I do locally that would be really good for my degree or for my research, but actually is contributing to something that's needed in the area? So that's why, because we've got this desire to close those gaps, we think that it could be a sort of a win-win opportunity for the project and for students at the university.
Okay, so are you working with students on projects at the moment?
Not directly, no. I mean, okay. What's really interesting is the more you scratch the surface, you realise quite a lot of good research has been done, including here. So there's a lot of work that's been done specifically on Dorset about the natural capital of the land in the area. And so, you know, when you look at it, often with these things, it's about joining up things that are going on. Often there's lots of things going on you're just not aware of. And I've actually been quite overwhelmed as the more we've looked to form the links, the more people have sort of come out who are already doing really good work. And so the purpose of the launch event is really to get this up and running and to find out what we already know. It might be that we already know some of it. So when we identify what we don't know, that we'll then be sort of going back and saying, OK, here's a list of the things that if anybody's working in this area, we'd be really interested and keen to work with you if you can look at some of these areas.
OK, so how long have you been going for?
Well, we tried to kick this off probably about 3 or 4 years ago. And at the time, there's some internal politics with some of the people I was working with, which I don't need to bore you with. But the real issue is that lots of people hadn't grasped the problem. And so lots of the kickback was, you know, actually, well, do we need this? Because there's lots of initiatives going on. They're all OK. Do we need something new? And the landscape has changed. So since a certain young teenage girl sat outside of her parliament and Extinction Rebellion took to the streets in the UK. And I think in fairness, you know, events have started overtaking us, whether it's floods, whether it's fires in Australia. There's been a massive leap forward in the awareness of the issue. Both councils have declared a climate emergency. And so whereas we were getting some sort of pushback from people saying, well, you might be treading on people's toes or you might be doing things that other people are doing, now there's a real groundswell of people who really want to work together and collaborate across councils, across businesses, across community groups, who are just saying, right, okay, we now all get this problem and we now need to pull together. So while the project has been sort of bubbling along a little bit quietly and has just organised a few events, I think now we're really at the opportunity to turn it into the major project that we always thought it could be.
Yeah, it's a very hot topic at the moment.
It is indeed. It? Yeah.
So what do you have any other initiatives that are going on at the moment?
So, I mean, not the key thing with this project is it's always been very much about facilitation, providing an overview, collating the information that's already out there. And I've always been very keen, right from when I shared the idea with the sort of initial people who got it off the ground, was that I don't want to duplicate what other people are already doing. And I don't want it to become an organisation that suddenly does a very specific project, because it needs to stand back and provide that overview, provide the measurement, provide the reporting, share best practice. However, by doing that, I am aware of, you know, some really good stuff that's going on there. So there's initiatives led by people like Sustainable Dorset, where they've got groups of householders who come together and look at how they can save money on their electricity bills and live more sustainability. There's a group of people in Verwood who've got together and are now looking at how maybe they can buy a plot of land and do something with that sort of from a regenerative point of view. The transition town movements are doing lots of good stuff. And the councils are starting to engage in this as well. So both of them are starting to pull together ideas about how their operations can become less carbon intensive, how they can save energy and things like that. So there is actually a surprising amount of good things going out there. Our role, the role of this project, is to say, is that enough? And if it isn't, you know, what else can we do? Is it just about replicating those projects everywhere? Or is it about going outside of the county and finding initiatives from other people in other areas who are doing things and saying, you know, can we bring that to Dorset and can somebody take up that initiative here and roll it out here?
Are you independent or are you something to do with the council? Or a charity, or
so it is a small independent group of people at the moment. I think different volunteers have helped me over the years, and a number of people have stepped up to help with the conference. But having had a sort of faltering start, as I've already mentioned, we took the view that we'll get things up and running now, which is the launch event on the 20th here, and then we'll take stock after that as to what the most appropriate structure will be for taking it forward. It will definitely be a community organisation, a non-profit organisation, and, you know, we'll go out to seek the funding to do the level of work that we need to do. The key thing, though, is really about this sort of facilitating and pulling things together. Both the councils are happy to participate. Both of them are coming along to present at the event, but we've made it clear to them that we want it to remain independent, because at the moment both of them are sort of open doors, willing to get involved. But equally, you know, if we sort of do this analysis and report on it once each year, we want to have the independence to be able to say, that just isn't enough, or you're going in the wrong direction, or while we love what you're doing in this area, what you're doing in that area just isn't right for this, to solve this emergency. So yeah, it needs to be independent to have that sort of credibility. Yeah.
Okay, and what's your story? How did you come to be involved with Zero Carbon Dorset?
So my story is, I mean, I was active politically when I was quite young, and then sort of families and things like that come along and you become less politically active. But I've always maintained an interest in the environment, and it's a sort of strange story really, but I was driving home from work one night down the M27, and there was a programme on about when would the oil run out, and this is a big thing, and you know, people were saying, well, you know, we've got to drill for more of it because we're going to run out of it, and what can we do? And there was a scientist at the end of that program who said, actually this isn't an issue, because if we burn all of the oil that we've already got and we're aware of now, actually we'll turn the planet into something in terms of climate change that is catastrophic and irreversible. Now, even though I thought I understood environmental issues, I'd never really understood we were that close to creating this catastrophe. So I went away, and over a course of a number of years started reading up the science on the subject. I sort of, having trained as an engineer, I suppose I always look to see if there's a problem, how do you fix it? And then ultimately studied for a degree in geography and environmental science, got myself trained as a presenter with the Climate Reality Project, which is the former Vice President Al Gore's project that he's got sort of trained presenters for. And that's really how we led to this, because I was doing these presentations. I do a sort of talk here, usually once a year to first year students. And it was through that engagement with the university and others, we suddenly sort of thought, actually, you know, how can we try and solve this problem? What can we do locally to try and to bring this to life? So it's quite a strange route into it. Certainly not from sort of initially from a professional basis, but just becoming aware of the problem and just having this desire to try and do something that helps to solve it.
Oh, it sounds great. So how long do we have left?
Not long at all. If you look at what the scientists are telling us, then most of the objectives we're setting for sort of 2050 are too late, and most of them are saying, you know, even if you look at the graphs that they're publishing in the reports that come out from the sort of the IPCC, the scientist body at the United Nations, all of those start to see a dramatic reduction in emissions now. And it needs to go down, you know, if you look at different reports, but somewhere between 7.5 to 10% per year now. So it is immediate. We need to take this action. And it's already, you know, the Paris Agreement said that we need to keep things below 2 degrees, but actually we should be aiming for 1.5 degrees. Chances are we're already going to surpass 1.5 degrees, because we haven't dropped. Even since the Paris Agreement has signed, we've continued to increase our emissions. So the actions need to be dramatic and need to be now. And really, we need to see governments acting on the sort of climate emergencies that they're declaring and putting plans in place that significantly change the way we do things. But they need to do that with a programme of education as well, as Extinction Rebellion talk about telling the truth. And this is it, because people aren't going to make those changes, even if they're government imposed, if we're not communicating the gravity of this problem.
Okay, and do you think it's at grassroots level like this, like individual people in Dorset coming together? Is that the best way to spur the government into taking action?
Yeah, I think it's two ways. We people have shown, as I've mentioned before, you know, the school strikers has really managed to, you know, get people interested in this, make governments, you know, when school children walk out of school, you know, government ministers sit up and take notice, and they might provide lots of reasons why that shouldn't happen. But at the end of the day, they have started to listen. And I think we will have to be disobedient. I mean, the whole project we're talking about here is about practical solutions and about, you know, making things happen. But we know, and even, you know, in fairness to the councils, they are governed by government policies. So there's only so much they can do. And I do think that there will need to be further disruptive activities, you know, from ordinary citizens, if we're really going to get our governments to take the action that they should be taking at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. And could you tell us a little bit more about the event on the 20th.
So the event on the 20th, as I said, is this is a project which has been doing small things, bubbling along for a few years. But this is we're calling this the sort of fundamentally the launch event. This is when we take it to what we've been aiming to achieve for a number of years, physically engaging with councils, businesses, community groups, academics, to look at various aspects of the problem, to look at various solutions, and to begin to build that network of people who can take this away, whether it's to help the project specifically in terms of identifying the status of where we are, or whether it's actually just to spur people into action in their own spheres where they can go out, can be encouraged, and to build that network, really, because whatever way we look at this now, no one person or one organisation is going to solve this. The council could be the best council in the country for getting to net zero, but they only control so much of what goes on around here. So they'll need to rely on businesses, community groups, the population at large to both be doing their own thing, but also demanding that the government takes the action that it needs to. So the event is a combination of academics reporting on things that they've already researched, community groups talking about the things they're already doing, and sessions where people can just ask questions and work together on how can we collaborate, what do businesses need to do. So it's a real cross-section of, as I've said, the councils, academia, businesses and community groups coming together to start this project going in the local area.
Okay, so it's here at Bournemouth University.
It is.
And is it open to...
Open to anybody.
Anybody, okay.
Yes, and free of charge as well.
Fantastic, that sounds good. And do you need to sign up?
There's an Eventbrite page.
Okay.
Easiest way to find it is developing a vision for a zero carbon county. That will, because when I've lost the link myself, that has found me to that page.
Google will take you there.
Yeah. So that's the easiest way to find it. And we are quite well subscribed at the moment, but there's definitely still some spaces there. And I'd rather that we had more people in the room than worry too much about people not signing up and not thinking that they'll be able to come along. We'll make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And what time is it? Is it all day?
Starts, I think it's 9:30 for registration, starts about 10, and then it's all day. But if people can only come for a part, that's absolutely fine. We'll be getting the agenda out probably a week beforehand. So again, if there's students who've got things on at that day, they don't need to come for the whole day. If they can see something on that's of interest to them when they are free, then absolutely feel free to come along and join in those sessions.
Sounds great. And before we let you go, if you could recommend or suggest one small thing that people listening could do starting today to help the climate, the environment, what would you think?
Can I give two answers to that?
You can.
Because I think there are two things. So there's the whole consumer thing. So you can pitch this wherever you like, whether it's, you know, it's basically changing your behaviours around, you know, not using things that you throw away after one use, to not buying throwaway clothes. So that sort of using less, refusing and using less as an individual is important. But we have to fundamentally recognise that we don't have time for everybody to change their behaviours. That shouldn't stop you doing it, but actually, if we're all brilliant at our eco-friendly lifestyles, you know, we couldn't change that quickly. The bigger things need to happen. You still put on the light switch and it's still not going to come from renewable sources necessarily. So, you know, that isn't all within our control. So one thing is, you know, do what you can, reduce the consumption and do those things. The second thing, though, is to take your own stand wherever you have that opportunity to demand that your leaders, whether those leaders are the, you know, management of the university, and in the businesses you end up working, the government and people you vote for, is, you know, say to them, either you do things right for the climate and for this planet, or you don't have my support. So I think it's that taking that personal stand that demands actions from those people who really can drive through the changes that we need.
Okay. Well, Mark Chivers, thank you very much for coming
in.
Thank you. And best of luck with the event.
Thank you very much.